Over these next Sunday mornings, we are going to be looking at the book of Joshua in the Old Testament and pursuing some studies there. So I'm inviting you today to turn to page 189 in the Old Testament section of the Bibles there in front of you. Do turn to it. Let's have a look at it. Let's have a look at those sentences that were already taken for us in our first reading. Page 189. Joshua chapter 1 and verses 1 to 9. We're calling this series, Over the Border. And today we take the theme of the presence of God. So we come to verse 2. Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I am giving to them, to the people of Israel. Over the border, over Jordan. It is strange, isn't it, how a little trickle of water can often create quite a barrier. I was taking a friend from Pakistan, a clergyman called Alexander Sohan Lal, around London. And as we drove along the Thames embankment, I said to him, rather proudly, "And this," I said, "is our great river, the Thames." He looked at it and blinked and said, "Is this your greatest river?" I said, "It is." He began to shriek with laughter. In fact, tears are coming out of his eyes. He said, "You must excuse me," he said, "but have you not seen the Ganges?" I hadn't. Of course, you can't see from one bank to the other side. It is strange how water creates barriers, whether it's a big river like the Ganges or a smaller river like the Thames, or perhaps a smaller still river, such as the Jordan. The Jordan isn't big, but it constituted a barrier, a border, a psychological difficulty that had to be negotiated as the children of Israel, under the leadership of Joshua, following the death of Moses, arrived at its banks. "We haven't been here before." That's what they were saying to themselves. "This is new territory. This is frightening." Perhaps it was the spring tide when, of course, the Jordan can overflow its banks and create a wider stretch of water. Even so, it is really a psychological thing than a physical barrier. The Jordan, deep river. And here were these people on the edge of the bank saying, "This is a deep experience. We've never been here before." Is the book of Joshua simply the account of a people's occupation of a diminutive part of the Middle East and the subsequent eclipse of the Canaanite culture there? Is that all there is to it? Is it just a series of conflicts that we're going to be reading about as we come to the exploits of Moses' successor, Joshua? Why, after the foundational first five books of the Bible, why is it that we have to have a book that is cluttered up in this way with crossing over banks and fighting some battles and storming some fortresses? Over the border. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 11 and 12 gives us the answer to that question. "Now these things happened to them as a warning, but they were written down for our instruction, upon whom the end of the ages has come. Therefore let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall." We're to look back at this Old Testament account of those Israelites at the end of their wandering. We're to learn from what befell them. We're to look at their exploits and to say, this applies to us. We are their successors now. And it's quite obvious from Hebrews chapter 4 as well that the Bible reader is to see the entry into Canaan as a picture. As a picture of our own endeavors, struggles, aspirations, decisions, our struggles to enter into the rest promised to us by God. God is leading his people on towards their promised rest in Canaan after all the frustrations and wanderings of those 40 years out in the desert, out in the wilderness. But it didn't stop at Canaan. Hebrews 4 verse 8 reads, "For if Joshua," had given them rest, God would not speak later of another day. And he goes on in verse 11, let us therefore strive to enter that rest. It's the same concept, the same picture. The promised rest didn't stop at the promised land. In fact, in Psalm 95, verses 7 to 11, David listens to God hundreds of years after the Joshua saga, assuring his people that if they don't harden their hearts, they also can enter into God's rest. And then Hebrews picks it up again in the New Testament. So we pick it up today. God's rest, God's peace, God's fulfillment, the sense of adventure that he puts into life, is coupled with his own continuing presence, which is promised to us. It is a today experience. And so therefore we're to take care that we don't miss it ourselves. The sense of being in God's will, of entering into the best of the inheritance that he has planned for us. It is Joshua's inheritance, and it's our inheritance as well. The rest of God. The one thing that is worthwhile. The thing that Mary of Bethany coveted as she sat at Christ's feet to listen to his words. It's not actually a passive, negative kind of rest. In the end, it's the vitality of the very life and purpose of God running through every day. Is there somebody who's just arrived in London from overseas, and you feel perhaps that you're in a strange country? Believe today, on the authority of this message here, that you will be entering into God's own purpose for your life here in a new country, having crossed over a border yourself. Is there somebody starting a new study course? Believe that God will help you, and that his promised presence will accompany you into that course and help you. Is there somebody facing some strange uncertainty in the future? You just don't know what the next thing holds for you. Let's believe that God's message comes to us through this passage of Joshua 1, reminding us that there is a place to enter, and it's the place of God's covenanted will for our lives. And when we are in that place, we're in the place of God's rest. So this passage of Joshua 1, verse 1 to 9, it emphasizes the idea of the promised presence of God. Have you seen it there? Would you look at the passage? Verse 5. He's told him already how wide the area is that he's to occupy. And then verse 5. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. It's a promise. Then look at the end of verse 9. Look on. Do you see it there? Be strong and of good courage. Be not frightened, neither be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. It is a promise. Let's take it as a promise, accepting it for ourselves too, as the successors of those children of Israel, the people of God. It was that promised, covenanted promise of God's presence that would tip the scales towards success. As Joshua took over from Moses to lead the Israelites from the east bank of Jordan, because that's where they come up, right back, well, up the back side, as I call it when I look at the map of Israel, the east side of Jordan, over the river, and then towards the fortified cities of Jericho, Ai, Lachish, and these other formidable strongholds that were to defy them. What was to tip the scales? The transforming, promised presence of God was to make the difference. It was to make the difference, one, at a time of transition. At a time of transition. After the death of Moses, there it is, after the death of Moses, one of the greatest leaders of all time, the Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise. It was a time of transition. If you were to draw up the 10 greatest men of all time, which is very difficult to do, but in human terms I suppose we could do it, we would put Moses in the first 10. I'm sure we would. He might be in the first 5. Here is one of the greatest exponents of leadership of all time who has died. And now the successor, feeling frail, fragile, steps into his place. It's a time of transition. He needs the promise himself. Because, you see, a time of transition is a time of comparison. That's the problem. You get promotion in your job, and immediately you're compared with the person who was there before you. Are you not? And you feel it as you step into their shoes. You think, oh dear, I wonder if I'm going to match up. And how do they dub Joshua? Moses' minister. So that's not very flattering, really. It is flattering in a way, because it must have been wonderful to be Moses' minister, but only Moses' minister. And when you look at Numbers chapter 13, and you see that Caleb and Joshua were two of the successful spies who reported back on the promised land and on how it was shaping up, they were only a couple of spies. Very accomplished spy. No one is quite like Moses. So I can imagine that after his departure, people were saying, we will never see his kind again. Ah, those were the golden days. Moses. And there was Joshua, and he was likely to be living in Moses' shadow. Now it's possible that there's somebody here living in the shadow of somebody else. Living in the shadow of maybe somebody who's senior to you. Living in somebody else's shadow, maybe a brother or a sister. And it grates on you. Let's not feel that. Let's accept this promise of God for ourselves today, now. That at a time of transition, we can be encouraged. And not live in somebody else's shadow, because we are people. We also are servants of God. The golden age of Moses they might have talked about, but it's a false way of looking at life if you believe in the living God. We do this regularly, of course. Cricketers will talk about Don Bradman, Len Hutton, you know, golden names. Or you athletics people, you talk about, especially if you're from America, Babe Ruth. Who is he? Somewhere. They all talk about him even still. And in 50 years' time, people will be saying, Daley Thompson, do you remember him? Oh. Liz and I once went into a little paddock, a little shut-off gate in the Wimbledon Tennis Championships, which had a tent. We went there by special invitation. We had a card to get in there. When we got in there, it was quite different from all the activity of the courts around us. It was suddenly a secluded atmosphere. Cucumber sandwiches, strawberries, little tiny cups of tea. And ladies were coming up to us and saying, do you remember Suzanne? Well, Suzanne Longlong was winning Wimbledon before we'd been born. They've now ripped down that tent. It's gone. Flushed away into oblivion. Because that kind of looking back and dwelling in the past in a kind of antiquarian way leads to passivity in the end. A passive, negative kind of way of approaching life which doesn't actually help, which is uncreative. So it is the transforming presence of God that must make the difference when we apply this in the Christian realm to our lives now. We're not to be living in the past. And if any of us find ourselves in a time of transition or coming into a new city, as perhaps some of you have just done, let us look at it as a time of opportunity with God's promised presence accompanying us. It was going to make the difference for Joshua. At a time of transition. Secondly, at a time of extension. At a time of extension. We read the words of God to Moses here. Verse 2. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land which I am giving to them, to the people of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, as I promised to Moses. Then he describes how wide is the land that they are to occupy. If you go to Israel, go to Judah, you find that there are different parts of it. The terrain is considerably varied. So you have the central mountainous region, which is in fact the land of milk and honey. Then you have the rolling hills stretching down to the sea. That's another part. Then you have the wilderness area stretching from Jerusalem right through to the Dead Sea. Just wilderness. Then you have the Negev Desert down to the south. It's all part of the land. But I suppose particularly these invading Israelites had their eyes upon the land of milk and honey, the central mountainous and very fertile, productive region. It is a time of extension. They're to open their borders, go over the border, with the promise of God behind them that he was going to give them that land. Joshua must have felt diffident about taking over the leadership. It's a time of extension. Even Moses couldn't accomplish it. Even Moses was left on the border. Yes, having defeated Og, king of Bashan, and Sion, the king of the Amorites, but it stopped there, had not gone over Jordan. So God says to his successor, you're the one to do it, to extend the borders now and go over the border. So imagine he felt diffident. It's good that he did, of course, not to go in his own strength. It's nice to meet with humility. There's an actor called Gordon Jackson, whom you have probably seen in that television series, Upstairs, Downstairs. He plays the part of the butler. He cannot bear to see himself on television because he compares himself unfavorably with his fellow actors. It's nice to meet that. He's a very accomplished actor. So here is Joshua feeling fragile. Good. And God's encouragement is particularly needed in his case. Are the days ahead going to be full of promise? What about the golden days of Moses? Can they be repeated? Doesn't matter how old you are. You can be in your 70s or 80s and still have a positive outlook upon life. I remember an elderly canon called Llewellyn Roberts, who I used to know. And he would go to conferences at the age of over 80. And I once heard him at one of these conferences going up to somebody and saying, these are great days in which to be living. Great days. I thought, well done. There's an 80-year-old. Great days. You could have excused him for saying, there were great days back in the 20s. Great days when I had a packed church, you know, somewhere, someplace or other. But no, the present, now, for him was exciting. Now is the time of extension for him. Great days. Can we talk like that? Let's not anchor ourselves to the past, but move with Joshua in spirit into the time in the future. And now, the time of extension with God's promise behind us. We have to school ourselves in this matter. After all, ambition is a neutral thing. Ambition can create a Hitler. Ambition can create a Mother Teresa, but lack of ambition creates nothing at all. We need to be schooled in this matter. What are we attempting for God? What am I going to do next for God? It's easy to talk like that from a pulpit. Not so easy to work it out when it comes to everyday concrete situations, especially the difficult ones, the buffeting times, the unemployment times. Nevertheless, still to see to it that we are extending our own boundaries as people and becoming filled out as Christian personalities because of his promise. After all, Elijah was a man of like nature to ourselves. We read in James chapter 5. He looks like a superman as we see him in the fiery chariot ascending to heaven. But he was not a superman. Of like nature to ourselves, we're told. Just one of us. Just an ordinary person. So it's God's presence and call that gives the momentum behind the call. Go over Jordan. Go and occupy. What's this next area? What's this next mountain to conquer? To change the metaphor. What is the next thing that I have set my eyes upon to do for God? You see, it depends who is giving the call. It was Napoleon who said to the French army, go over the Alps. And they went over the Alps because it was little Napoleon telling them. He was a great man. And it was God who said to Joshua, Go over the Jordan. So what is God saying to us? Now, today, in our own particular situations, whatever they may be. He must be saying something. We're in this place today of worship. Let us ask ourselves, what would God wish me to do? How would he wish me to develop further as one of his servants? Is there something he wants me to do in this church? Is there something he wants me to do in this city? Is there something he wants me to do among my friends? What is God asking me to do? Where is he asking me to go over? It's the promise that makes the difference. At a time of transition, at a time of extension. Lastly, at a time of disruption and collision. Look again at the passage, would you? Look at verse 6. Be strong and of a good courage, for you shall cause this people to inherit the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Again, verse 9. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Be not frightened, neither be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. No one is going to stand against you. That comes as the promise. At a time of collision, a collision of cultures and of world views, as Israel came over the border, a new thing was happening across the borders of the river. God's purpose at that time, you see, was not to do what we're trying to do today. Sometimes dear Christian believers find themselves stumbled by these battles of the Old Testament. They say, isn't it crude to have attempted things in that way? No, God's purpose at that time was not to teach the principles of Christianity, so familiar to us in our generation, but to prepare the way for Christ through Israel. And Israel was the chosen and sometimes rather rude and crude instrument of revelation. But at the end of it all was the idea of purity of worship, a monotheistic worldview, no syncretism. The false gods of sex and of war and of child sacrifice were to be challenged and overthrown. It is actually an exciting book. A complete transition of worldviews was to take place there. So there were things to be done, worked through, struggled over, and God's promise behind it all at a time of intense activity, collision, and disruption. So our thoughts go towards Joshua, poised there, feeling frail, needing those words. Don't be afraid. I'll be with you wherever you go. He needed that, and we need it too. Without that, there could be no activity. Without that, he could have stayed on the banks of the Jordan and said, look, another day, some other time. I wish we could go across, but not yet. One day. There came a moment when he had to cross the Rubicon and go. I love the words of an Indian Christian called M.A. Thomas. I have always been looking to the future for opportunities to glorify thee. I live in the future and not in this day that thou hast given. A life of dedication I want to have, but I am longing to have it only in the future. I want to make my relations pure only in the future. I am a Christian in a dream, living in an unreal future world, neglecting the marvelous opportunities thou offerest me today. Lord, give me the strength to rise above the weakness of postponement and continuously create in me a feeling of life is today, for tomorrow I may never be. It's the transforming promise of the presence of God that gives the impetus to action. At a time of transition, at a time of extension, at a time of disruption. And the great call, therefore, is for obedience. We have that there in those later verses. Of verse 8, the book of the law shall not depart out of your mouth. You shall meditate on it day and night, that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you shall make your way prosperous, and then you shall have good success. To take seriously the living word of God and to obey it. That was the priority for Joshua. And it is possible that we can fail to enter into God's rest and fulfillment. to miss even our own goals. Somebody once said, I wonder if you know the quotation, I'm going to be a wife and build a house. Quote, Marilyn Monroe. When you come to the Old Testament, the commentary on it in the New Testament, in 1 Corinthians 10, is, with most of them, God was not well pleased. With most of them? It's an amazing understatement. With all but two, God is not pleased. Caleb and Joshua, the only two of the original crowd who got into the promised land. With most of them, God is not pleased. So it is possible to miss the best. So the great imperative is to have the vision clear. Where am I going? The instructions grasped. The words imbibed and meditated upon. And obedience pursued. And when all those come together in one person, you have got virtually an unstoppable force. The golden days are not yesterday. The golden days are today. And Gladys Aylward, that diminutive missionary to China, who had no qualifications whatever. After her death, her Bible was found after that amazing life of service, bravery. And on the flyleaf of the Bible was written, God won't ask you for certificates. He'll only ask if you've been faithful to your call. Let's pray for a moment. Arise, go over this Jordan. God our Father, you see us as a church poised at the beginning of an autumn season. And you see us as individuals, so many of us wanting your best. Teach us to arise, to put on our spiritual armor, and to obey you with confidence because of your promise, for Christ's sake. Amen.